Hello, good day, and welcome back to How to Buy a Kitchen or Bathroom, the podcast brought to you by these3rooms.com. I'm your host, Lindsay Blair. By day, I am the editor of Kitchens, Bedrooms and Bathrooms magazine and these3rooms.com. And now I am here on this podcast chatting you through the ins and outs of getting the kitchen and bathroom you really want. As always, thank you for joining me. I'm coming to you from the office at KBB Magazine HQ, where I've been set up with a rather cosy podcasting room, which you could probably fit two people in at a very, very tight push. So yes, it's very, very cosy. It's just me in here at the moment. Just as well, my guest today is joining me by the powers of the internet. I'm chatting to someone who is a pro in all things tiles today, and the aim of this week's episode is to help you narrow down the huge selection of tiles out there so you can pick the perfect ones for your kitchen and your bathroom. So what can you expect from this week's pod? Well, how to navigate the huge selection for a start, the pros and cons of different tile types, and how to feel absolutely 100% sure that you're buying the right tiles for your room. Ready? Let's go. Need some help finding those all-important kitchen or bathroom suppliers? From kitchen and bathroom companies that can help with your whole redesign to brands specialising in sinks, taps, showers, tiles and so much more, head on over to the These Three Rooms directory and search using your postcode to see which companies are close to you. Simply visit these3rooms.com/directory and we'll help to get your project going. This week I am saying hello to Kevin Lamming, who is a stone and tile project consultant at Artisans of Devices. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Lindsay. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. It's very, very sunny today. Now, tell me, I'm very curious, what does a day in the life of a stone and tile consultant look like?
Well, really, it's sort of in some respects dictated by sort of showroom visits and things like that, and then working through just following up on people that have requested samples to check they've arrived and see if they need anything further. But just generally speaking, it's just helping people find the right material, just providing them with all the information that they need.
So to help people find the right tiles for their project, you're really there in the decision-making process.
Exactly correct. Yes. Yeah. It's just to help them, just guide them towards the right tile to find the right suitability, etc.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I have a feeling you're going to have all the answers to my tile dilemmas today. I mean, there's certainly lots to think about when choosing tiles, but I have to say tiles have had quite the moment, haven't they, in the last 2 to 3 years? And I think it's probably the Instagram effect, if we can dub it that way. Bold, colourful, pattern tiles. I mean, you can't scroll through Instagram without seeing something like that pop up. So the demand for those sorts of tiles has skyrocketed, hasn't it?
It absolutely has. And I think that there's various patterns that create a following of different designers, and then patterns will bloom. Take our lily pad tile, for instance. That was hugely successful and then just gathered a lot of interest. And that's, I think, various styles like that just penetrate social media and everyone sees. As you say, you can't scroll through Instagram without seeing some sort of pattern tile. I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone's probably seen the lily pad tile, or if they didn't know what it was called, I'm sure they've probably seen it if they want to search for it now. I did a little search, and the hashtag tiles of Instagram has 35,000 posts. But if you go for tiles, it's actually 4 million.
I did not know that.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're in the market for tiles, you know, you're looking on social media, you're looking at showrooms, you're looking at websites, you know, retailers that have tiles on there. There are thousands and thousands of tiles out there of all shapes and sizes, different colours, different materials. It can be quite overwhelming if you're looking for that one or two tile type for your home. So aside from keeping a cool head and not being overwhelmed, where do you begin when you're looking online or walking into a showroom and being faced with that huge selection of tiles?
Well, I mean, my initial piece of advice would be to do as much research as you can before actually sort of starting out. So save Instapose, just look through various websites and save Pinterests and also magazines as well. So I'd gather as much information there as you can and just try and get a feel for what you like and the styles that you're interested in. And then certainly take a look around online first. For instance, we offer sort of a design service and various options like that. So make use of those options. And of course, you've always got the option of just picking up the phone and giving us a call. Yes. And then when you walk into the showroom, the best thing is just to give, for instance, myself a clear criteria of what you want to stick to. So the areas and bring any magazines, bring any Pinterest, whatever you have to show us. And then we will guide you in the right direction because it immediately narrows down your options, albeit there will still be a huge selection.
Quite often when you start creating those mood boards and tearing pages out of magazines, saving images on Pinterest and all the rest of it, you start seeing themes crop up and you might not have even realized there is a theme to your taste. But once you put it all together, you might see that you love a terracotta tile or you love a really bold pattern, or maybe you are a bit more minimalist and you want to bring color and pattern in through different things in the room. So when you have homeowners come into you to seek out your expertise, what kind of things are you most asked about?
I would say that the biggest thing that clients ask is about suitability. It's really the first question to ask because every other question is kind of irrelevant if that suitability answer doesn't work. So, for instance, if someone's like the encaustic tiles, but they were looking to do a bathroom, depending on how much use that bathroom gets, it may not be the best tile for that. So I would say certainly the biggest question is suitability. That's absolutely the biggest question that they would ask.
Is there a science behind the suitability of a tile? So if we're thinking about kitchens and bathrooms specifically, are there certain tiles that work best in those spaces?
There absolutely are. If someone loves a tile enough, they'll sort of accept the fact that it isn't ideal and we'll have to live with it. But just for instance, a Brooklyn showroom visit we had last week, very, very classic. We're looking for a kitchen tile and it ran into the hall as well, actually. But they were looking at encaustic tiles and also looking at quite a porous natural stone option. So the science sort of behind it, you really need to look for something, especially if maintenance is quite high up there on your criteria list. You need to find something, for instance, porcelain would be absolutely ideal because it's a non-porous product. It's very, very easy to live with, very easy to maintain. So there is a certain science within that. It's just sort of just trying to find a tile that works and is suitable for the environment that it's going in.
Yeah, we can go into the different pros and cons of different tiles, but I guess if you're just setting out on your journey, knowing what questions to ask and asking the retailer or even just looking online at what material it is and asking whether it is porous or not and what sort of maintenance that might require. I mean, marble is the classic example, isn't it? I mean, real marble, authentic marble, takes a lot of care and attention to keep it looking as good as it does new. So just being aware of the care and maintenance. And like you say, if you're willing to put that in, then go for it.
No, absolutely. It's relatively common that someone will see a product more common in marbles just because of the features that the sort of marble range offers as a whole, that people accept it and are just sort of happy for it to age. But certainly if you're looking for something practical, if you have dogs and cats, and especially if you live out in the country or in a bit more of a mucky environment, then absolutely. It's a very, very important question to ask sort of early on in the decision stages.
And what about the actual, you know, the room? If we're looking at kitchen and bathroom, do you need to look at the quality of the walls? You know, is that something that you should be going into your retailer and telling them, oh, my wall's a bit sort of uneven or it needs a skim or whatever?
To be honest, when it comes to that, I personally would recommend talking to the installer. With a tile, unless it's a mosaic and it's got an actual feature curve on a wall, you're really going to need to have it straightened out, whether that be stripped back and re-skimmed or a cement board or something similar. It's really something that you'll want to talk to your contractor or tiler about, in my opinion.
So putting the effort in upfront to look at the structure to make sure that once your chosen tiles are fitted, they're going to look great, they're going to be even, they're going to be the look that you want to achieve. You mentioned the different porosities of different tile types. So I think it's worth going into some of the specific materials just to outline briefly what to expect from each of them. So, I mean, what's the most popular type of tile that you guys sell or that you recommend? And maybe we should start there.
Our most popular tile, it would be limestone, I'd have to say, just because of its feature and limestone is sort of, if it's not overly hard to live with at all, really, as long as you're okay with it changing. The sort of cons, if you can call them cons, obviously it is a porous, it's a natural stone, so it's going to age over time. It's not going to sort of remain looking immaculate. That can actually be a pro, especially if you put it in more of a sort of authentic or a period property. That's sort of what people are looking for anyway. Something that blends in, something that does start aging, sort of showing signs of wear and tear and battle scars. And it's the same with marble and things like terracotta. Some people see them as pros, some people see them as cons, but the main thing to remember is that it will change. It can't, you can't expect a natural material or sort of a semi-natural material like terracotta to remain the same.
So would those sorts of natural products come with a more rigorous maintenance routine?
Absolutely, 100% they would. At the same time, it's not anything too scary. For instance, a lot of people use a proper mop and bucket on a limestone. Now, that's sort of not the best way to maintain a floor. It will just sort of wash all the dirt into the grout lines and make them very dirty. So if it's maintained correctly, we would recommend using a pH-neutral cleaning solution. We recommend one called All Clean. It's effectively a mop, but with a microfiber pad on the bottom, and then it's sort of a tank behind it, and then you just spray a fine mist in front and just take that dust off the surfaces, and that's all that's needed. The thing that you may, or clients with natural stone that choose to have that option, may need to consider is that 10, 15 years down the line, it's certainly worth getting a stone restoration company in to strip it all back and reseal it, just to bring it back up to its original state. Whereas with a porcelain, obviously, you'd never really have to do that.
Well, let's talk about porcelain next, because there's so much selection when it comes to porcelain tiles these days, and they can be used on the wall and the floor. I think it's important to note. But porcelain, in terms of technology over recent years, has really come on, hasn't it? You can get the look of lots of different stones and marbles and even wood sometimes and have it as a porcelain tile. But what are the pros and what are the cons of porcelain, would you say?
Porcelain is a brilliant product, and as you say, it has come on sort of leaps and bounds over the last few years. The main pro for a porcelain is that it's non-porous. It's very easy to clean. There's pretty much no maintenance involved. With a porcelain, you can use an epoxy resin grout, which isn't absorbent. It's so practical to maintain. On the cement grout, you stain it, it will stain immediately. But with a porcelain, you could say you can use this epoxy resin grout. So with a porcelain and an epoxy resin grout, you pretty much have the sort of easiest to maintain floor out there. One sort of con of a porcelain is that it is a harder product to install than a natural stone. The reason being, it's very, very hard, very, very brittle. So the actual cutting process is a lot more time consuming. It's a bit sort of taxing as well sometimes, because it's so brittle. If you sort of put pressure on the wrong area, it will just split. However, it's not that bad. It's sort of worse than it sounds. And obviously, a good point for the porcelain is that usually they're 10 mil thick for inside. So it's brilliant if you want something that's not only light if you're installing over floorboards, but if you don't have that room or that ceiling height where you can fit a 20 mil stone in, then porcelain is brilliant for that.
That's a really top tip, because I think with tiling, if someone is doing a renovation project, tiling can often be a job that is done on a DIY basis because, you know, saving costs, balancing the books. So to be aware that with a porcelain tile, while that's probably one of the more popular options, you might need to just get that contingency supply in, because, you know, you might end up breaking some if you're cutting it to fit the edges of your room.
Absolutely, especially if you're a first-time installer. And I can say from personal experience, from when I first installed porcelain tiles for a friend, it is reasonably hard work. You usually use a tool called a scribe and break, which is fine. But then if you need to cut sort of 10 mil off a long wood effect plank porcelain, then you have to be sort of quite careful. It can be not the easiest of tasks, but
it's one of those things that the professionals, like with many things in life, the professionals make it look so quick and easy, but it is such hard work.
I completely agree. I guess it probably does become easy for them after a while, but tiling is a bit of a skill.
So. Absolutely, it's 100% a good skill. Now, you mentioned briefly encaustic tiles before, and I think that's one of the things people have probably seen crop up on their grid, because they're so beautiful. They've got a lot of character, lots of lovely patterns. Shall we just explain what an encaustic tile is and then just say what the pros and cons are for that type of tile?
Absolutely. An encaustic tile is sort of a very, very traditional tile. I believe it was introduced in the sort of mid-1800s. It's basically typically a square tile. Our encaustic ranges are either hexagonal, but predominantly 20 by 20 centimetres, 16 mil thick. They're all handmade. They put a stencil down in sort of a square mould, and then they it's quite an intricate process. They pour coloured cement into each shape, and then once they're all filled up, they quite quickly get the stencil out, and then all the dyes, or all the coloured cements rather, sort of just touch. They then sift just grey cement over the back, and then they press it, which some encaustic tiles are made by kilning, others are made by pressing it. But so typically they are a porous tile, they're all handmade, they're considered as a very green friendly tile, especially if they're pressed as opposed to kilned. But that sort of explains just very simply what an encaustic tile is and how it's made.
And what are the main advantages of an encaustic tile, in your opinion?
The main advantages of an encaustic tile, there's just such a wide and sort of diverse range of colours and patterns, and the colours aren't like the colours we get in porcelain. You can see the handmade, you don't get a really hot pink or a really bright yellow. The encaustic tiles are more, just slightly more muted colours, and you just get a very, very handmade feel. And they're very traditional. They're very popular in sort of Victorian homes, and more sort of, it does depend on the pattern, but more Moroccan-inspired properties as well. But they will age. Again, it brings me back to my point on the natural stone. It can be a pro, it can be a con for some people, but they will age. You have to expect a sort of a patina to develop over time.
Is it true that after a few years, if you sand down, for want of a better word, the actual encaustic tile itself, the pattern is throughout the tile, isn't it? So you're not going to lose the pattern.
It's actually only about 5 mil on the top, and then these 5 or 6 mil, and then there's about sort of 10 to 12 mil underneath of that of just pure cement, basically. So you can sand it down, but not year on year. It will eventually go down to the cement. At the end of the day, it's a cement tile. They do have a sort of reasonable amount of toughness to them. So they are quite versatile. I would recommend just deep cleaning the area. That will work just as well and not sort of damage the actual build-up of the coloured cement in the process.
I see. And now, could you use encaustic tiles on both the wall and the floor, is my next question.
You absolutely can. It has been done. The only thing is that the encaustic tiles are 16 millimetres in thickness, so sometimes it's not ideal to go on walls. Some people see it as an unnecessary use of space. I know it's only sort of 6 mil more than a porcelain, but they are reasonably thick. I personally would recommend them more for floor use. If you wanted them to run up a wall, then you certainly can do, but it might be worth considering a ceramic or something just slightly thinner.
So far I'm thinking, right, I need to think about my sort of needs in my home, what sort of area it's going to go in, the maintenance required for the tile. So really getting to know the material of the tile before you even look at patterns and stuff, I guess, is a really important part of the choosing tile process, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And it goes back to what we were saying earlier about the suitability. You have to find out whether it's suitable for the application that you have it in mind for. Otherwise, it's just wasted time if you sort of do a lot of research into it and choose it as a tile and then you find out that it's not suitable. So yeah, I completely agree.
Are there any tiles that are more suited to a kitchen, in your experience?
It depends on the level of use that it's going to get. If it's an everyday, something that's going to be used quite a lot, then certainly I would recommend going with a porcelain or a much harder natural stone, like an Egyptian material, or just something that's a lot harder. For instance, a Portland stone or a Cotswold stone, Bath stone, something that's a lot more porous. People do use them very regularly in kitchens, but they're just not ideal for that purpose. They will go grey. So yeah, I'll either choose a porcelain or choose a very, very hard natural stone.
And is that the same for bathrooms? I mean, quite often the same sort of logic applies because, you know, there's water, there's a lot of use.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly the same thing applies. You just want something that's as less porous as possible. It will give you a lot less sort of maintenance hassle in the future.
And now if I'm in a showroom and I'm looking at the tiles and I understand the materials and stuff, can I then take some samples home to actually see them in the space and just, you know, get a feel for the actual material myself and take time looking at it?
You can take samples. It's actually pretty essential, in my opinion. I always recommend clients take samples. It's one thing seeing them in the showroom under the light that's in there. It's absolutely essential to see them in the light that they're actually going to be installed in, because that can change the colour and tone of it quite dramatically. So absolutely, I always recommend samples. There's nothing stopping you, obviously, from buying a square metre, buying a box, just to lay it down there initially. But it's something that's, in my view, absolutely essential.
Yeah, I think it's sort of a renovator's arsenal, isn't it? A good mood board and a box full of samples. Now, you can have a lot of fun with tiles, which we've touched on. You know, there's so many available. There's lots of colours, patterns. And I think, you know, the ones that we do see on social media are often quite bold. But you don't have to go bold. You know, it's all about personal choice after all. But lots of people use a tile, or some people might use a tile, for a starting point of a whole scheme. Is that something that you find?
It is. It's something that normally would go down first, just because of the process. You don't want it to go down after sort of wallpaper has been put up or cabinetry has gone in, really, just because it is a reasonably messy process with buckets of adhesive and solvent-based sealants, etc. So absolutely, it is usually something that they start with. Not only that, I guess that sort of part's kind of irrelevant in the actual initial stages of choosing it, but it's something that's going to be there forever. You can repaint units, you can change wallpaper, but really, especially with certain areas, sort of a kitchen floor, you want that kitchen floor to be there forever. So 95% of the time, in my opinion anyway, clients do start with a tile, especially for the floor. Not so much for the wall, but definitely the floor.
Yeah, and then build the rest of the kitchen or bathroom scheme up from there. And if you do want to have a pattern, you know, you can use a colour or a pattern in a kitchen, for example, on a splashback or maybe just an accent throughout the scheme.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when it comes to sort of wall tiles, I find people are way more creative. Because not only because they're easier to change, but because it's a smaller area as well, people tend to go sort of more, not neutral, and this isn't the case for everyone at all, but people do tend to go slightly more neutral and more muted on the floor, and then just bring out their more colourful and patterned side of things on splashbacks, because you can afford to. It's easier to replace should you want to do it sort of 5-10 years down the line.
Well, let's talk about pattern and colour, because, and just your choice of tiles in general, because it might be that you choose more than one tile for your space. How do you best mix and match?
So in my very humble opinion, you can't go sort of too wild. I personally would recommend sticking with 2 or 3 tiles. Now, that is quite a general comment, because you could use sort of just a plain white marble tile on the floor, which, although it is a tile, it doesn't really count as a pattern or a colour. And then you could use, for instance, a pink tile as a splashback, and then a mosaic in other areas. So there's no sort of rules as to that, in my opinion. But I would personally say stick with 2 to 3 patterns. You don't want it to be really, really busy. But yeah, that's my advice on that.
One of the things I'm seeing lots of is in a bathroom, a shower area. You know, you've got a wonderful walk-in shower area, and there might be a brilliant pattern to sort of differentiate that zone of the bathroom on the walls, a pattern tile on the walls. How would you, if you decided you want to do that, how do you go about choosing the tiles and surfaces for the rest of the bathroom space if you really want to make a statement with that shower? Let's take the lily pad as an example. You know, I have seen that used in a shower area before, and it looks wonderful, but it's quite a statement tile, isn't it? Especially if you go for one of the really zingy colours. So would you recommend keeping the rest of the tiles simpler within that scheme, or can you use different pattern elsewhere as well?
Take the lily pad, as you say, for an example. It is a very, very feature tile. You could use pattern elsewhere. I personally would use pattern, but in terms of, take our Alessio marble, it's quite popular for use. So you have the lily pad, and then you can use a mosaic as still a feature, still sort of a format feature. But with colour, I'd recommend keeping the rest of the bathroom semi-neutral use. Go for the sort of look at the warmer greys, like our Louvre porcelain, just sort of springs to mind. You don't want to incorporate too much feature, especially when you have that hugely bold pattern of, for instance, again, the lily pad. You do want to balance it out, in my opinion. Now, some people will just go absolutely wild. We have had quite a few projects where the clients just absolutely love pattern. And I did a project where they used lily pad tiles and also terracotta in one room. It's all based on the client's opinion and sort of preferences. But I would certainly say balance it out where you can.
Yeah, I always love to say it's your home. If you love it, go for it. Do it. One of the points that I wanted to pick up on that you mentioned there was the mosaics, because you wouldn't necessarily think of that as a patterned tile initially. But I think that brings to my mind a point about the lane pattern of tile. So you could have a metro tile as an example. And while you might have a real statement tile in the shower area as an example, or as a kitchen splashback, you might then use a simple tile but laid in a different way, like a herringbone or something like that. Is that something that you've come across?
It absolutely is. Our Alessio marble, again, is brilliant for that. So it comes in loads of different formats. People, a lot of the time, will feature an area in, for instance, a hexagonal mosaic or a slim brick mosaic or something similar, and then use the same tile but in a simple format, either a metro brick or a slightly larger brick, or even in a sort of a larger format tile. So definitely, yes, that is done very regularly.
If you are not a massive fan of bright, bold pattern tiles, or you're a little bit nervous about going for a heavily patterned tile, you could still introduce pattern, But even with a white tile, but just lay it slightly differently in a herringbone or, you know, in a parquet type effect.
You can be so creative with pattern formats. There's so much option out there, and it is actually a very, very nice thing. In my opinion, it's slightly more timeless than choosing sort of an actual coloured pattern tile. If you did want to play it slightly safer, then certainly consider it, because it sort of brings feature into a room while not being too bold, and it may or may not be a more sort of timeless thing.
What about cost? I think that's one of the things that when you're looking at tiles and you look at per metre square costs or even individual tile costs. Sometimes one tile might seem quite cheap. Sometimes the meter square price might seem totally expensive for, you know, the actual quantity that you're getting. How do you manage the costs of tiles? And, you know, is that something you really need to measure up and know exactly how many tiles you're going to need from the outset so that you can budget for it?
It is always a very good idea to have an idea of quantities needed. The best way I manage cost, if a client's on a slightly stricter budget but wants something slightly more prestigious that gives sort of a sense of grandeur, then I would certainly recommend going for something that's lower in cost for instance, all of the floor, and then feature a sort of slightly higher tile in smaller areas. So you still have that element there, but you don't use it over a bigger area. So although it is still something can be quite a high squared meter price, at the end of the day, if we're using it in a small area, it's still a smaller sum, but you still have that sense. You still know that tile is sort of a prestigious feature in there. That's what I would recommend.
One of the questions I was going to ask you earlier was about grout. Now, are you team matching or do you like to contrast your grout?
This is often a question we get asked in the showroom, and there's honestly no right or wrong answer to that. If you're installing, for instance, take our Marlborough terracotta in the parquet, it's quite a feature tile for its shape. People want to contrast the grout colour to it to make the pattern stand out. So that goes with all sort of similar, if you want the actual shape or format of the tiles have been laid in to pop out, then use a contrasting grout, whether that be lighter or darker. Usually it is lighter. On the other hand, if you had a more contemporary finished floor, sort of a polished concrete tile, then you'd want to match it as close as possible. So there's honestly no right or wrong answer to that, in my opinion, Lindsay, but it's all about what you want the floor to actually feature, whether it be seamless or whether you want the format to really show.
Yeah, you can get all sorts of colours of grout now, can't you? It's far beyond just the white, black or grey. You can get lots of different shades.
You can. There's hundreds of different options out there. I think that the grout industry was kind of behind for the last few years, but it is catching up now with various easier to maintain grouts. And as you say, there's hundreds of different colours, which can make it a bit complex when trying to choose one in some projects. But there is a lot of option out there these days.
I love the idea of a darker grout that doesn't necessarily show up any mucky marks or buildup of condensation in the bathroom, for example.
Yeah, it's a popular one that it's used for. We've got a product called the Mono Hex in the Daisy, or it comes in the Blanc and the Noir, but it's especially in the white, it's very, very commonly used with an anthracite grout just to give that sort of honeycomb effect. But no, I do like the idea as well, actually.
Yeah, kind of hide a multitude of sins if you need it to.
You can.
Now, one thing I have to ask you, because you are a tile expert, so I want to know from you, what trends have you got your eye on? What's going to be the next big trend in tiles?
Well, I think the trend that I'm seeing right now is just a twist on the older terracottas. We introduced the Marlborough range a few years ago now, and that's been hugely popular very recently. It's not the traditional dark oiled linseed infused terracotta. It's more of a light, dusty effect. So I certainly think that terracottas are coming back in, and also the deeper greens. And then also the sort of indigo colorways as well. I'm seeing a lot of those in just with the clients that come in with their kitchen designs, a lot of sort of deeper greens, deeper blues, purples, indigos. That's what I'm seeing a lot of right now.
Interesting. I love that. So keep your eye open for those types of tiles, those colourways. One thing that I've seen as well, it might be the same for you, or maybe this is only just filtering down to me now, is really narrow metro tiles, long and narrow, which again, you can really have fun with playing, but I quite like them stacked vertically. That looks really striking.
Absolutely. We have got a range called Dolly Ceramic that fits that category. But more recently, we've introduced the bamboo mosaic, which is exactly that, just small sort of fingers of tile, basically, that are all stacked vertically, sort of portrait style on the wall. I absolutely love that as well. It's very satisfying to see. It's nice that people are changing from just your average metro sort of brick format. It's good.
Excellent. Well, you know, I'm always open to the new tile trends, because I think when I look at people's mood boards and look at Pinterest boards and all the rest of it, the amount of tile imagery that is often on there is astounding. Even if you don't realise it's from a tile company, often it really, really is, because there's just so much inspiration out there to be had. Now, before we go, I ask everyone usually at the end of an episode for their golden rule of kitchen or bathroom design. But since you're a tile expert, I want to know, what is your golden rule for choosing tiles?
I think planning is a huge step of making it a lot easier to choose your tiles. One thing that I actually always advise clients to do is look on quite affluent interior designers' websites and magazines just to get an idea. You'll find that you start creating a pool of styles that you love. We get clients that come into the showroom sometimes that don't have a clue, that they haven't thought about it. They're coming in with a completely blank mind, which is fine, but it makes the process very, very time consuming and quite reasonably stressful as well, which we're not fussed about at all. But from a client's point of view, tile choosing can be reasonably stressful. So do your research, find the color palettes that you love, find the styles that you love.
Excellent. So plan, and plan some.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great. Well, I think that's an excellent place to round off. So, Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat to you. Thank you so much for coming onto the podcast to talk me through everything to do with tiles. I've certainly learned a few things there. And we've now let the listeners know that if you are stuck, you can seek out a stone and tile consultant. I didn't know that was a thing, but it is. And by gosh, you've got lots of tile knowledge. So invaluable for anybody who is really stuck. So thank you again. And I hope you have a lovely day.
Thank you. And you, Lindsay, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much there, Kevin. That was absolutely brilliant. I feel like I am so much more knowledgeable about tiles and where to start when choosing tiles, and I hope that you, the listener, feel that you have picked up some tips there too. Now, plan, and plan some more. Kevin's last few lines there, I think, really sum up everything that you need to know before choosing tiles. Think about exactly what you're using your room for, how much use it gets, how much maintenance you're willing to put in to keeping tiles looking spick and span. If, like me, you prefer a low maintenance approach, then maybe porcelain is the one for you. But if you are willing to put the effort into looking after marble, or you like the patina of natural stones, then go for it. If you love pattern and you want to go for a maximalist look and clash lots of patterns in your kitchen and bathroom, go for it. But I think if you are a little bit unsure about the longevity of pattern or colour, then pick up some of Kevin's tips about laying patterns and maybe just have a bit more fun about the way that you install the tiles. It could make all the difference to the final design. There was so much advice in there. I really hope that it's helped you out. If you do have any questions, as we approach the end of series one, to round off, I'm going to be answering your questions. So I'm on the hunt for questions and for your dilemmas. So if you're planning your new kitchen and bathroom and you are thinking, what the heck should I do about X? Well, drop me a line on hello@thesethreerooms.com and I will endeavour to seek out the experts to help you in your quandary. Don't forget to rate and review this episode and subscribe to the podcast to help other renovators find it. And as always, thank you for listening. Join me next time for more of How to Buy a Kitchen or Bathroom, the podcast.